Now, I'm assuming that you've read this material, the quotations in the first part, pages 62 and 63, and then there are 107 passages summarized. 107 passages. What I would like to do is to take the classification on page 70 those four categories of miracles, interventionist, creative, destructive, and remedial, using those definitions just above the chart, and I would like with you to go through these 107 passages, but actually not look them up each one and make long comments about each, because we would not get through 25 that way, or 15. But I would like to run through them and classify them to give you, partly give you a feel for how you can do this, that is inductively, and a feel for what kind of miracle is being spoken of in the particular passage. We'll start with Genesis 19 on page 64. I'm going to suggest that we have here two destructive miracles. Two. However you want to mark that, two times D or whatever. Two destructive miracles. Angels struck the Sodomites with blindness. The Lord turned Lot's wife into a pillar of salt. Exodus 3:2, I would suggest an interventionist miracle. Here is something very odd going on. Different from the ordinary course of nature. There's a blazing fire. Bush is burning, but it's not consumed, not burned up. The third one, Exodus 4:2-7, God turns Moses' staff into a serpent. I would call that a creative miracle, see? By the way, I'm suggesting that before each of these references, you put a D or an I or a C or an R so as to classify them, okay? So let's start again. I didn't explain the rules of the game. Genesis 19, 2 times D. Exodus 3, 2, I. Exodus 4, 2 to 7. First one is a C. Moses' staff is turned into a serpent. Then turns the serpent into a staff again. Now, that's also creationist, isn't it? God made Moses, but I take that as one together, that's one unit, although you could argue for it being two miracles. God made Moses' hand leprous. I'd say that's destructive. And then he restored his hand to health in a moment, and I would suggest that's remedial. Exodus 7:10-12. Aaron's staff is turned into a serpent. I'd say that's a C, creation, creationist miracle. By the way, it's very interesting. I have a illustrated history of magic. Well, Dr. McCrae has it right now, but I have an illustrated history of magic, and in it, it tells how some of the magicians of Egypt of long ago were able to take snakes, large snakes, and put some kind of poisonous substance on their heads or on the sides of their heads or something of that sort, and the serpents would become absolutely stiff as a board. And like a rod. And then these magicians were able to give the impression that the serpents were staffs or sticks or something of that sort, just straight as carved serpents, in other words. They were hard. And then they were able to do something, perhaps throw them down to shake them up, to make them turn back alive again from that state. And this illustrated history of magic had no religious overtones to it. It just mentioned this in passing, and I thought it was kind of interesting that the Egyptians here had serpents, and you run into the problem of how the Egyptians, how their sorcerer priests turned staves into serpents. That might be one explanation, magicians, okay? Especially if you think they're doing these by the power of Satan, but then you remember that Satan has no creative power, no power to create something objectively real. So you have to put that all together. Well, in any case, Exodus 7 to 12. I would like to suggest what we've got here is 10 plagues. Well, that's obvious, we have 10 plagues. But what I'd like to suggest here is divide the plagues into creationist, interventionist, and destructive. I would suggest the blood in the Nile and other streams is creationist. The frogs, I would suggest, is interventionist. The lice, I would suggest, creationist. The insects, I would suggest, interventionist. The pestilence, I would suggest, destructive. The boils, destructive. The hail, destructive. The locusts, I would suggest, interventionist. The wind blew them over into that area, and then later the Lord changed the direction of the wind and blew them away. Something to do with migration patterns. The thick darkness, I would classify as interventionist. And the death of the firstborn as destructive. Shall I go through that again? Okay, blood, creationist. Frogs, interventionist. Lice, creationist. Insects, interventionist. Pestilence, destructive. Boils, destructive. Hail, destructive. Locusts, interventionist. Darkness, interventionist. Death, destructive. So that brings us out to 2 times creationist, 2 times C, 4 times D, and 4 times I in that Exodus 7 to 12. Those are chapters 7 through 12. 2 times C, 4 times D, and 4 times I. And I take those as 10 distinct miracles. Exodus 13, I'd suggest that as creationist. You might argue that the pillar of cloud could have been interventionist. The pillar of fire, I would have to go with creationist. You might argue that one, especially the cloud. Exodus 14, I'd call that interventionist, the parting of the waters of the Red Sea. Exodus 15, I'd call that remedial. Exodus 16, creationist. Exodus 17, interventionist. God intervened in the ordinary course of nature. Leviticus 9, destructive. Leviticus 10, destructive. Numbers 12, destructive. And I think we'd probably have to assume there, although it's not mentioned in this particular point, remedial when the Lord healed her of the leprosy. Okay? Remember that happened too. Number 16, this 2 times destructive. Earthquake swallows up Dathan and Abiram, their households. Fire consumes Korah and 250 men. Number 16, 41 and 50, destructive. Number 17, interventionist. Numbers 21, remedial. Numbers 22, interventionist. Joshua 3, interventionist. Now that's a very interesting one, because the water is cut off way up the river, so that the riverbed drains and becomes dry, and then of course a wind blows over it and dries it even further, and then the Israelites cross the Jordan River opposite Jericho as though on dry ground. But it's way up the river that the intervention takes place, say with a landslide or something like that, to create a dam of some sort, and then the water comes down later after they are across. The timing, of course, is critical, because someone could say a landslide could happen at any time. The timing then becomes the critical factor. Joshua 6. Joshua, where am I? Yes. Thanks. Destructive. Joshua 10, interventionist. That's really intervention. Judges 6, I would say creationist. Now you might argue that fire out of a rock could be magma or lava or something, and fire comes out and consumes it. But there's no indication of that in the context. Question.
Why is that? How is that different from Leviticus 9:24, where the Lord consumed the offerings with fire?
I suppose the difference I thought there was, that's a good question. I thought the difference there was probably the fire, as in other instances, came down from heaven and consumed it. Here it comes out of the rock. And yes. You see the problem, now you already put your finger on one problem in classifying. Interventionist is a sort of a large category. Because you could say, hey, isn't a creationist an intervention? See what I mean? That's why I have to stick with these definitions on page 70. Otherwise it gets confusing. Okay? But you can argue that there's some overlap between the idea of interventionist and creationist, or interventionist and destructive too. But you can certainly make an argument. 1 Kings 15:19. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Judges. Yeah. Judges. I'm getting ahead of myself. Judges 15:19. Interventionist. Thank you. Well. Judges 13:19. Strike that one. Strike that one. I had a question mark on that, and I really agonized over that one for a while. I don't think it really fits into any category of a miracle, per se. And it just crept in somehow into the notes, so strike that one. Judges 15:19, interventionist. 1 Samuel 5:1-4, I'd suggest two times destructive. First Samuel 6:19, destructive. 1 Samuel 12:18, destructive. You could say, wasn't it interventionist to cause destruction? You see how you can do that? Yeah. 2 Samuel 6:7. destructive. Very directly destructive. 1 Kings 13, there's a destructive, the withered hand, and then there's a remedial, the restoration of the hand. There's a destructive and then there's a remedial. 1 Kings 17, I'd call that creationist. Lord, replenished the flour and the oil. And it kept replenishing. There's a real creation going on here. 1 Kings 18:38, destructive. 2 Kings 1, destructive. 2 Kings 2, I suggest interventionist. The waters parting. 2 Kings 2 again, I suggest first a creationist and then an interventionist. Second Kings 2 again, Elisha, remedial, throws salt into a spring of bad water, turns it into good water. 2 Kings 3, interventionist. 2 Kings 4, but you'd have to read the context there to see why it's interventionist rather than creative. 2 Kings 4, creationist. Here's one jar of oil that fills all these jars. That's it's creationist. Second Kings 4 again, remedial. The boys raised from the dead. 2 Kings 4 again, Elisha, meal into the pot of poisonous stew, remedial. 2 Kings 4 again, creative. There's a gift of food, it's distributed, they ate and had some left over. Some of these miracles are reminiscent of Christ's public miracles. Very interesting. Feeding of persons, raising of people from the dead, so on. 2 Kings 5, remedial. Naaman is cured of his leprosy. 2 Kings 5 again. Gehazi becomes a leper by a judgment from God, destructive. You can see after a little bit, you can start anticipating what it's going to be, what the category is going to be. 2 Kings 6, what would you say that is? Pardon? Intervention. Yes, very good. See, I wouldn't have to tell you the rest. You could probably do the rest yourself. But just in case you couldn't. 2 Kings 6, 19, destructive, the army struck with blindness, then remedial, they restored the sight. 2 Kings 7, I'd suggest creative. Just how that sound of a great army was created is difficult to say. 2 Kings 13, remedial, dead man comes to life. 2 Kings 19, destructive, 185,000. 2 Kings 20, interventionist. Now you would have expected that. 2 Chronicles 7, destructive. 2 Chronicles 26, what's that? Destructive, yes. Daniel 3, what is that? Interventionist. Boy, you're really catching on. Daniel 6. Pardon? Interventionist, yes. Jonah 1. Intervention, good. Luke chapter 1. First you have destructive. Later you have what? Remedial, good. Boy, you're really going. John 2, what is that? Pardon? Creative, yes, that's a creative miracle. John 4, remedial. Luke 5, intervention, good. Mark 1, cross that one off. Cross that one off. Doesn't count. Unclean spirit, casting out, exorcism. Don't count that.
Explain that later.
Yes, of course. Of course. Mark 1 again. Mark 1, 13-31. Remedial. Mark 1 again. Remedial. Mark 2. Remedial. Good. Mark 3. Remedial. Mark 4. Remedial. Wait a minute. That can't be Mark 4. It has to be Mark 5. See, you're inventing things here. Mark 5, remedial. Matthew 9, remedial. Matthew 9 again, remedial. John 5, remedial. Matthew 8, remedial. Luke 7, remedial. Mark 4, very good. Boy, you're sharp. Mark 5, cross it off. Yeah, cross it off.
All about Matthew 9, 30-32.
Oh, the difference there is the man's speech is restored. So there it brings in the physical aspect, okay? Okay, good, good, David, to recognize that. Matthew 12, remedial because the sight and speech are restored. Mark 7, or 6, I mean, but the healing, many sick people, okay? Remedial. Mark 6, creative, yes. Mark 6 again. Interventionist. Mark 7. Cross it out. Mark 7 again. Remedial. Mark 8. Creative. Mark 8. Remedial. Mark 9. Remedial. Mark 9 again. Pardon? Well, you probably do have to scratch it, although the temptation is to put remedial for the latter part of it. Okay? Exactly. 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 That's interesting. Well, the question there comes whether miracle is a technical word. That's the other part. Luke 10. No, we didn't. You can cross it off if you wish. You can put an R in for the second part if you wish. John 9. Remedial, yes. Luke 10. Heal the sick. Remedial. Luke 13. Remedial. The healing. Luke 14. Remedial. Luke 17. John 11. Mark 10. Remedial. Mark 11. Destructive. That's the first one we've seen in a long while. Mark 11. We said that, didn't we? Luke 22. Just checking. Luke 22. What is it? Remedial, yes. John 21. Intervention, yes. Acts 2. Cross it off. Acts 2:43. can't tell, can you? In the context, however, you might argue this is remedial, in the context. Acts 3, remedial. Acts 5, destructive. Here's a second destructive one. Acts 5 again, remedial. Acts 5 again, intervention. Acts 6, yeah, don't know. Contextually, it's probably remedial. Acts 8, same thing. Contextually, it's probably remedial. Acts 8 again. Yes, very good, intervention. He snatches Philip away. Acts 9. The first part is destructive, isn't it? The second part is remedial. Okay, Acts 9 again, remedial. Acts 9 again, remedial. Acts 12, intervention. Acts 12 again, destructive, and that should be A-N-D, not angel. It shouldn't be angel, you know, it should be and angel. No, it should be an angel, shouldn't it? Cross off the G. Cross off the G. Simply an angel. And that, Acts 12, is... destructive. Acts 14, remedial. Acts 16, remedial by context. How about crossing it off? You could argue that. You could argue that. Very good point. Okay, so some of these you see are not black and white. Some of these are arguable. And I'm sure if we got started, we could really argue. Acts 16, 23, 26. Thank you, interventionist. Acts 19, remedial. Acts 20, remedial. Acts 28. Acts 28. Pardon? They thought it was. It fastened on his hand. Now, the only way a viper could fasten on his hand, since a viper doesn't have any hands, is by biting him. Now, you could say, well, the viper maybe bit him, but didn't inject anything into him. You could say that. Although, generally speaking, when a viper strikes, something is injected through the fangs. So, well, you could say interventionist, or you could say remedial. Remedial. Acts 28, again. Remedial. And Luke 24. What is that? It's better than remedial. A souped up remedial. It's basically remedial, but certainly there seems to be something else going on there, like something creative or something of that sort. Maybe creative and interventionist as well as, well, not interventionist so much. Well, maybe there is interventionist there, but okay. Now, some of the questions I raised here. Bottom of page 70. Why are there more than twice as many interventionist miracles in the Old Testament as in the New? Why? Can you answer that? Can you make a stab at it? I mean, everybody here would be guessing, okay? Let's guess together. In your guessing, you may come up with a good reason. Here's the Old Testament. Here's the New Testament. You know, that's pretty small compared with that, isn't it? I mean, this is three times as much as this. Three times as long. Believe it or not, that's a perfectly good reason. That's a perfectly good reason. There's three times as much material there. No joke. He thought he was saying that in fun. Why are there no less than four times as many creative miracles in the Old Testament as in the New? Part of that can be argued for on the basis of what we just said, okay? Three times as much material. Is there any other reason why there would be more creative miracles in the Old than in the New? Ray.
Because the period of time was larger.
Oh, so we're not just talking about material, we're talking about period of time. What are we talking about, period of time? Very good point. So what are we talking? Almost 2,000 years? As opposed to what? 100? That's a big difference, isn't it? 20 times as much time, almost. Or 18 times as much time, or something like that. Okay. Third question. Why are there 4.5 as many destructive miracles in the Old Testament as in the New? 4.5 times, that should say. Why do you think that? 4.5 times as many destructive miracles. Can we give any reason for that? I mean, is the answer the God of the Old Testament was different from the God of the New Testament? I don't think we can explain it that way. That's part of the answer, I'm sure, Jeff. Subtracted those that are not directly or indirectly related to punishment or judgment for sin, but just had destructive miracles without that, you would cut the number down considerably. Then you could compare them with those that are not related to judgment for sin in the New Testament and compare the numbers that way. Do you think it would have anything to do with the fact that most of these take place in terms of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Israel, through Moses, up to the time of Christ, and what we've got here is God's covenant with these people, promises of blessing as well as promises of cursing, so that his people stood in a special relationship to him, and they would be punished for evil. So that maybe that has to be entered in as a factor into the whole concept of destruction. That may explain some. But one other thing, if you subtracted those 10 miracles in Egypt, you'd only have 17 to 6. You know, that's a big block, 10 right there. And 17 to 6 goes along with 3 to 1 as far as three times as much material in the Old Testament as in the New. So all you have to do is think about 10 all bunched together, and that would skew the figures somewhat. What about the fourth question? Why are there more than 3.5 times as many remedial miracles in the New Testament as in the Old? It's only 1/4 of the whole Bible, the New Testament, and yet there are 3.5 times as many, more than 3.5 times as many remedial. Is there a reason for that? Can you give a rationale? Why should there be so many remedial? Jenny? So, in other words, you're connected with the mission of Christ and his public ministry. And a lot of that had to do with remediation of sin's effects. Yes, I think that probably is the explanation why there are so many remedial miracles in the New Testament, with Christ coming as the mediator of the new covenant and as one who's going to turn back the effects of sin and remediate them. It was quite proper to do that in his public ministry and then climax that with his atonement. What about the fifth question? Why are there more total miracles in the Old than in the New Testament? Actually, there are fewer, aren't there, if you say 3 to 1. But it skews it somewhat with all those remedial miracles in Christ's public ministry. There are so many of them. Look at that, 40 in the New Testament, most of them in the Gospels. Ray.
It must have been, well, we know for the ministry of the Lord, there were a lot of things that were not recorded in the field.
Oh.
And so there were probably a lot of things in the prophet's field that were not recorded.
That's a good point. So there may have been a lot of miracles that simply weren't recorded. And if we find them clustered together in the time of Moses and Aaron, then again in the time of Elijah and Elisha, then again in the time of Daniel in the exile and the Hebrew children, and then again in the ministry of Christ, those four periods where you have great clusterings of miracles. Well, three of those are in the Old Testament. Three of those. And as you suggest, a lot of things that were done in those cluster periods may not have been recorded. And of course, a lot was not recorded that Christ did. John chapter 20. Okay, any other observations on these five questions? There are various ways to explain these numbers, some of which are really cogent. 3 to 1 in terms of material, 18 or 19 to 1 in terms of time, the purpose of Christ's public ministry, or part of his purpose, to remediate the effects of sin. And as Ray mentioned, a lot of things that simply weren't recorded, and therefore it's hard to be hard with the numbers, too, and compare the numbers. Now, excluded categories of God's activity. here are the categories that most of the writers exclude and are excluded in these notes. Original creation. Now, someone could argue, hey, that's a miracle. You know? The bringing into existence of primal energy. Someone could argue, that is a miracle. And yet, practically all the writers exclude that from the categories of miracle. And the reason they do that, I think, is because that, for the first time, brings creation into existence. And miracles are usually defined as taking place in creation. So there's a rationale for that. The second one, ordinary and extraordinary providence. Again, they're distinguished from miracles, so naturally you would exclude them. Thirdly, certain specific modes of special revelation, altered states of consciousness, audible speech from God, prophetic declaration through human instruments. Those are not considered miracles. They are special revelation, but they're not considered miracles. They're supernatural, but they're not considered miracles. Inspiration of Scripture, the guidance by the Holy Spirit of the writers of Scripture, that is not considered miracle. Regeneration, the question does come up often whether regeneration is not a miracle in the sense of a creative act of God. Miracle in that sense. It's a supernatural act in according to some definitions. A supernatural act in which a real, genuine, new creation takes place. Of course, when you say new creation, you have to watch that very carefully, what you do with it, because it affects your whole conception of sanctification. New creation. If you want to press new, then either in 2 Corinthians 5:17, either you are totally new, so that nothing of you from before regeneration remains, and everything of you is brand new. That gets you into hot water, that kind of definition. I actually heard an evangelist one time claiming that everything is new, including your body. You have a new body, you have a new soul, you have a new spirit, you have a new mind, you have a new heart. Everything is new. It's really amazing. Pardon? Why the aches? He didn't explain that. He didn't explain that part. Yeah, that's a good question. New aches.
New aches.
That's terrible. But regeneration is not ordinarily considered a miracle, although it's certainly wonderful and marvelous. Now, see, there you can get into semantics and say, well, hey, what's the difference between marvelous and miracle? Well, miracle, notice, can be defined in a technical sense. And in a technical sense, this is not a miracle. Again, someone would say, well, it all depends on how you define it. Your definition may rule out, per se, certain classes of events. Exorcisms of demons, casting out of demons. That's not usually considered a miracle. Again, it's a spiritual activity. It certainly involves supernatural power. Only the difference is it's not viewed as being events in the material world. It has visible effects, but they're not visible displays of extraordinary divine power. So that, again, by definition, such things are excluded. So you can see, it depends on how you frame the definition, you see, as to what is included and what is excluded. Miracle is related to creation again and again and again in terms of intervention in creation, what God has created and his processes and so on. So that, remember, in the definitions that are given on page 70 of the four classes of miracle, interventionist talks about the ordinary course of physical and or biological states or process, creative, physical substance, biological process, destructive, physical substance, biological process, remedial, physical, biological effects of sin. All of those, you see, are related to what has been created. So you're talking about a supernatural intervention into created reality, but not per se into the spirit world. The unseen spirit world is not usually included in the definition of miracle. Again, you could expand the definition and try to do that, but you'd have to play with that, work with it, see if you could get something that would actually work, that would hold those categories. I've suggested here in a proposed definition of miracle, and admittedly this is a difficult subject because many have tried it, I've suggested negatively miracles are not examples of magic, and by that I mean sleight of hand, stage magic, where the magician is actually trying to fool you. Now, see, we don't mind that kind of deception. It's deceptive. We don't mind that kind of deception. We laugh, we have a good time when we watch a magician do tricks. We say, ooh, and ah, that's great, you know. We're being deceived, but we don't mind. We enjoy it. He's doing something over here with his hand, but he tells us to look here. It's very interesting. And, you know, it's interesting. In the study of magic, the professional magicians, curiously enough, say that the scientists are the worst possible people to examine the validity of magic. Because scientists will look right here, and they'll look and they'll weigh and they'll measure while the magician is working over here. It's very interesting. And so they say they're the worst people to put on a panel to see if something really magical is going on, because they're not focused to watch. They say what you really need is another magician. Another magician can do that. Now, when claims of psychics were made from time to time, some years ago, the man they called on very frequently was Harry Houdini. And Harry Houdini knew how to do most of the tricks of these so-called psychics. So that he said, I can reproduce any trick that you want to, which you call psychic phenomenon or phenomena. I can reproduce almost any one of those tricks. And he did, again and again and again. And it was absolutely fascinating because they claimed psychic influences were doing it, and he showed how it could be done, and better, by ordinary stage magic. Miracles are not simply, or are not at all, examples of magic. They're not that, period. They're not illusory perceptions, like mirages, like seeing things that aren't there, like hallucinations. They're not illusory perceptions. It's not that we are changed when we're looking so that we see something different. It's that something is going on there in external reality, external to our minds and our perceptions, which then changes our perception and our understanding. Thirdly, miracles are not fideisms produced by strong psychological frames of desire. Fideisms are simply acts of belief based on will. Fideism. The will to believe. If you want to believe something strongly enough, many, many times, the claim is that you can believe it. You can get yourself to believe it. Miracles are not fideisms. They're not beliefs based on acts of will and prompted by frames of desire. You want something so badly. You want it to happen so much that it happens. It's not a miracle. Fourthly, miracles are not merely highly improbable events. Merely is underlined because they are highly improbable events. But they're not merely that. And they're not merely phenomena that we do not fully understand or cannot completely explain. They are that, but they're not merely that. And they're not merely marvelous, awe-inspiring events. See, a good magician could go into some parts of the world that have been relatively untouched by civilization and could pass himself off as a god and do magic tricks and really produce awe in the natives. Could really do that. Could really gain that kind of credibility in his then pronouncements. Miracles are not merely marvelous, awe-inspiring events. They are that. They're marvelous and they inspire awe. Suggestion. Positively, miracles are events in the material world that are visible displays of extraordinary divine power exerted either immediately or immediately. God either acting directly, immediately, or causing a landslide up the Jordan River to block the water from coming down. He can do it immediately, directly, or he can do it indirectly. But either way, it's a miracle. See, the means, whether it's direct or indirect, is not crucial here. The means are not crucial. Sometimes the timing is crucial. Sometimes that's the crucial factor in a miracle. The moment the priests put their feet into the waters of the Jordan stopped coming down. Now, stop coming down. If it was way upriver, that had to start a long time before and happened just then when God said it would happen. They were only given overnight, so it had to happen pretty quickly. The timing is critical. Sometimes it's a timing. And that's a miracle also. So yeah, you can even subcategorize now, subcategorize in terms of the means that are employed. Bart.
We sort of made a distinction earlier on between ordinary, extraordinary providence and supernatural. And yet, the word term supernatural is not used here. I'm wondering if you consider these phrases equivalent. Do you consider that to be supernatural power specifically or not?
In the distinction that we've made between ordinary, extraordinary, and miraculous, this should really then be supernatural in that context.
When we talk about the means, we sort of made some discrimination. We talked about unusual or extraordinary means.
Precisely. So, to clarify that, this would better read supernatural, okay, rather than extraordinary. Just to clarify the distinctions. I mean, this would be perfectly proper in another context, but in the context of these notes, in terms of providence, ordinary, extraordinary, since we made that distinction, then Bart's absolutely right. Supernatural would be much clearer. So if you wouldn't mind clarifying that in your notes. Secondly, miracles are signs or pointers that clearly indicate the place of God's extraordinary activity. You could say, Bart, supernatural activity. Just to be consistent. I mean, in that context, the way extraordinary is used could be interchanged with supernatural, having made it in the first point. But just to be consistent, we'll say supernatural. Okay? Because then we're technically defining it more precisely. And third, miracles are authentications of God's messengers and attestations of their messages as divinely originated. You remember Jesus said that. If you don't believe the miracles, if you don't believe my words, right, believe the miracles. The miracles attest Christ's message. And of course, the resurrection of Christ really is the final attestation of Christ's whole message. Now, one can ask, do they always have to include all three of these? Events, signs, authentications. Well, let's think about that. Are there cases in these 107 where you don't have an authentication of God's messengers, attestations of their messages? Right. The axe head floating. Let's see, where is that? 2 Kings 6:6 on page 66. In the middle of the page. You're referring to that one?